Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive, and there's plenty to talk about on this edition of the show. Today, as far as guests go, we are going to talk to Coach Wade Williams of the Carbon High School softball team. We're going to continue the season wrap-up interviews. Carbon softball, they completed their season over the weekend. Coach Williams will join us. That'll be the final season wrap-up interview that we have for the spring sports season. But on top of that, we are also going to talk some horse racing today. Justify is now one win away from claiming a Triple Crown. He'd be the second Triple Crown winner since 2015. Took us 37 years for an American Pharoah to roll around. And now we have a distinct possibility of having the second in 4 years. How legitimate is Justify? When we talk horse racing, we bring in a great friend of mine, Steve Bordstein of Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico, horse racing expert, hosts the nationally syndicated Fast Track horse racing program. We're going to talk to Steve Bordstein about that today. Are we on the brink of history? I think Justify has a terrific chance of winning the Triple Crown. I've said that now over the last month or so. We'll talk some horse racing today with Steve Bordstein. I also want to spend some time talking the NBA playoffs. Last night, I was a little bit surprised, to say the least. I expected Golden State to come out and wallop Houston, and in fact they did for the first, three or four minutes of the game. It was 12-0 Golden State at one time, and I'm thinking this game is going to be a blowout. It was probably the weirdest game I have seen in the NBA playoffs in quite some time, and that's not hyperbole. When you look at the quarter-by-quarter scores, okay, Golden State is up 9 at the end of the first quarter. It's exactly what you would expect, right? Houston outscores Golden State 34-18 in the second quarter. Didn't see that coming. Golden State comes out in the third, and they double up Houston. They outscore them 34-17. All right, that's a little bit more of what I expect in this series. And then Houston outscores Golden State 25-12 in the fourth quarter. 12 points they held Golden State to. I thought in order for Houston to win a game in this series, they would have to score in the 120s. How often is 95 points enough to beat the Golden State Warriors? Would I be concerned if I was a Warriors fan? Look, you need Andre Iguodala. I didn't know how big of a factor Andre Iguodala would actually play in this series. You need Andre Iguodala. The bench production was mediocre at best for Golden State last night. But I do want to point this out as well. I've been extremely hard on Mike D'Antoni for the last, 6 or 7 years here on this show. I'm not a Mike D'Antoni fan. He's outcoached Steve Kerr through the first four games in this series. The adjustments that Houston has made throughout this series, that's the reason it's a best 2 out of 3 set now, and Houston once again has home court. Last night, Steve Kerr, maybe it's a level of arrogance that Golden State plays with, and when you've won 2 NBA championships and you have 4 All-Stars on your team, there comes a point in time where you got to let them be them. I get this. Golden State was horrible offensively in the final minute of this game. Down 2, they were determined to put up a 3-point shot, hit a 3-point shot, and take the lead. Didn't need it. Late in the game, Golden State has an opportunity. Down 2, nothing is working as far as the offensive set goes. Houston is playing lockdown defense, and Klay Thompson puts up a 16-footer from the baseline that was absolutely unwarranted when Golden State still had a timeout left. To me, Steve Kerr was completely outcoached in this game. And there are things late in the game that, again, it's not a criticism of Golden State, but when you have the success that the Warriors have, you tend to play with a little bit of arrogance. And I thought that the Warriors played with that late in this game yesterday, and it came back to bite them. For all that, Steph Curry got a clean look with 0.5 to play in the game, and they were able to advance the ball. because of the timeout that they saved when Klay Thompson put up a terrible shot from the baseline and Steph Curry's shot didn't fall. To me, it was just that's not the Golden State Warriors. And I think the Warriors are still fine in the series. Houston has extended it longer than I thought they would already. I thought the series would go five. Again, it's a must win for Houston in game five, because if you fall down 3-2, you're not going to beat Golden State twice in a row. I just don't see that happening with elimination on the brink, with Golden State on the brink of getting back to the NBA Finals. Credit Mike D'Antoni. Credit the Houston Rockets. Don't make it about what Golden State didn't do. Let's look at what Houston did do yesterday. And Clint Capella was once again huge for this team. He had 13 rebounds, 12 on the defensive side of the ball. When you have a team that is this potent offensively, limiting second and third chance opportunities are huge. And Clint Capella was terrific last night, I thought, in the paint. And of course, James Harden was James Harden. Had 30 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, did a little bit of everything. This has been a really entertaining series. It's been a crazy series. And that sets us up for what's been another very unpredictable series tonight. We get Boston and Cleveland. Start time for this game is scheduled for 6 p.m. And again, I really don't know what direction this series is going to go. I really don't. Boston looked great in games 1 and 2. Tristan Thompson and the adjustments that Tyronn Lue has made games 3 and 4. It's a series once again. And tonight, the series tied 2-2, Game 5, Cleveland and Boston, 6:30 start time there. Let's take a look at the schedule in Major League Baseball. We've had day baseball pretty much throughout the entire day. Right now, we have the Padres and the Nationals going into the seventh inning, and the Padres actually lead Washington 3-0 in that game. The Brewers defeated the Diamondbacks in a massive way earlier, 9-2. The struggles of the Diamondbacks continue. They are now 25-24. They had a golden opportunity to put a stamp on that division, or at least make it very difficult for teams to recover and push, and they have given that up. The Diamondbacks not playing good baseball. Milwaukee improves to 31-19 with a victory. Also, some finals from today. The Tigers top the Twins 4-1. The Royals get the best of the Cardinals 5-2. And the Astros beat the San Francisco Giants 4-1. Justin Verlander gets the win in this contest. Verlander's been pretty good. 6-2 with a 1.08 ERA. I think the Astros won that trade last year with the Tigers. 5:05 start time tonight. We get the Yankees with CC Sabathia on the mound. We'll go toe-to-toe with the Texas Rangers. The Braves will take on the Phillies. We get the Angels and the Blue Jays, the Pirates and the Reds. The Marlins will travel to meet the Mets, and we get the Red Sox and the Rays. David Price goes up against Chris Archer. That's the 5 o'clock hour. 6 o'clock, Indians-Cubs. White Sox play host to the Orioles. 8 o'clock hour, it's the Mariners and the A's. And in the nightcap tonight, the Los Angeles Dodgers will take on the Colorado Rockies. Start time for that game is set for 8:10 p.m. And some big news coming out of the NFL. The owners have passed a new national anthem policy requiring players on the field to stand for the national anthem. Okay, this was voted in majority 32-0 between all the owners today. If a player is on the field during the performance, he has to stand for the national anthem. Now, players also have the option to remain in the locker room. The policy subjects teams to a fine if a player or any other team personnel do not show respect for the anthem. That includes any attempt to sit or kneel, as dozens of players have done, I guess, over the past 2 years. That's what they've done. Protesting racial inequality and police brutality. Those teams will have the option to fine any team personnel, including players, for the infraction as well. Goodell said the vote was unanimous earlier today. Some important details remain unclear after the policy's approval. We still don't know what the specific fine that teams could actually subject to the players, and also how the league will define respect for the flag. That's very vague at this particular time. NFLPA Executive Director DeMaurice Smith reacted. He was not happy. He sent out a bunch of tweets today. I don't think that guy is ever happy. It doesn't matter what we're talking about. That's a quick rundown of what's happening in the national sports front. We're going to send it back for just a few minutes for a quick commercial break. Local sports recap is coming up. But again, we'll be joined today by Carbondino softball coach Wade Williams and also Steve Bortstein. We're back in just a moment on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And yesterday on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we were joined by Carbon High School track and field coach Jim Jukes as we continue to recap the 2018 spring sports season. The Dinos had a stellar performance on both the boys and the girls' side of the track at state, finishing 8th overall. Coach Jukes yesterday on the show talked about the overall performance of both teams.
We did really, really well. I was proud of our kids, the way they fought through the whole meet. I mean, we didn't have a disappointing thing happen at that track meet. It's very, very seldom that you have a meet that you make it all the way through and not have a couple things that fall apart on you. And we really didn't. You know, we got kids in finals where we needed. They performed just great.
At the state championship tournament this past weekend, junior Derek Hillam claimed the state championship in not one but two events. First, he took care of business in the long jump where he was ranked number one, and then took home the top prize in the 300-meter hurdles. Coach Jukes talked about Hillam's overall performance.
It was really cool because, you know, he was expected to win the long jump. I mean, there was a lot of pressure on him to win that long jump state title because he was number one going into state. The hurdles was the prelims of the hurdles was the same day as the long jump. He had put in a good jump and then had to go run the prelims. He came back and won the long jump, and I think that took pressure off of him. Once he won that long jump title, it was like, hey, I'm a state champ. And then the next day in the hurdles, he just said, hey, I'm going to go for it. Hadn't really won a 300 hurdle race all year long. Goes out and wins the state title and surprises a lot of people, ran an amazing time.
Outside of Derek Hillam, the Carbon Dinos had several girls who performed quite well, as Shannon Baker, McKenna Blank, Emma Christensen, and Reagan Hansen all logged top five performances. At the end of the day, Coach Duke said that this team will hold a lasting imprint.
There's one word that describes this team that hasn't really been with any other track team I've had, and that's team. I mean, they really have been a team, and they found that out on their own. I think every kid on the team has had a positive experience, and they've really been able to excel at finding out how to help each other out, how to cheer for each other, how to go and do the extra mile.
For the complete results from the state championship meet, make sure you visit CastleCountryRadio.com. We move over to junior college basketball, and Utah State Eastern men's basketball player Rafael Montero has signed with Augusta University to continue his college playing career. Montero led the Eagles in scoring and rebounding this past season, averaging 14.5 points and 6.2 rebounds per game. The Brazil native capped off his lone season at USU Eastern by being named first team All-Conference. Montero graduated with USU Eastern last month, registering honors as well for his hard work in the classroom. All in all, Montero proved to be a strong influence around the basketball team. Augusta University plays in the Peach Belt Conference and plays at the NCAA Division II level. And it is that time of the year once again to prepare for the Night Golf Tournament, which takes place at the Millsite Golf Course. This is an annual event that continues to get more and more popular by the year. This year, the Night Golf Tournament will take place Friday, June 8th, beginning at dusk. The cost is $60 per person, and it is in the format of a four-person scramble. To register, call the Millsite Golf Course today at 384-2887. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss the play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow!
We have one more interview as we continue to wrap up the 2018 spring sports season here in the local area anyways. We've talked over the last week and a half with coaches throughout Carbon and Emory on all sides of each sport. And today we're going to wrap that up as we talk Carbon High School softball. Now the softball team had a terrific year, actually made a nice little push in the state championship tournament, went to the quarterfinals unbeaten, lost, went down to the one last bracket, picked up a win, and then their season came to a close in the very next round. Still, though, one of the most successful, if not the most successful season in Carbon High School softball history. This program just continues to get better and better. Four seniors on the squad. We're going to talk about those girls and more right now with Coach Wade Williams, who is joining us over the phone. Coach, always a pleasure. Thank you again for the time today.
Thanks, Jordan. It's good to be talking with you.
Coach, let's start by talking about the way the season came to a close. You guys made a pretty impressive run throughout the state championship tournament. Unfortunately, you guys ended up in the one-loss bracket after the quarterfinals, did pick up a victory over Grand, but the season came to an end in somewhat of a gut-wrenching fashion against Manti. And I guess if you take that Manti game, which was an 11-12 setback, and you compare it to the North Sampete game in which you guys won 15-14, boy, there was a lot of entertaining softball in this tournament.
Yeah, all three of those teams, I mean, us and Grand and North Stampede, we hit the ball and we knew going in it was going to be a slugfest. We just kind of hoped that when it was all over, we'd be on top. Unfortunately, you know, against Manti, we didn't come out on top.
Coach, when you go back and you look at the way the girls were playing in the state tournament, and again, it was impressive to pick up a win, 14-0 win over Summit Academy, and then that 15-14 win over North Stampede. Did you feel that the girls were playing their best softball of the year at that point?
Yeah, at that point. We really played well that weekend. We come back ready to go, and I think the rain delay kind of hurt us, where we didn't get a play, and then they moved the tournament for the next week.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting dynamic. I know that could probably go one of two ways. I mean, first off, when you're playing good, you want to keep playing, especially when you find a rhythm in a weekend tournament. And for some teams, I'm sure an extra couple of days of practice and rest probably did them well. I thought, Coach, once that was announced, I thought for the teams that enter the higher seed that have had the easier route to get to where they're at, that plays into their favor. At least that was my perspective on it.
Right. And that's my point. I mean, we were really playing well. And then to take that week break did not help us.
How did you guys approach that practice-wise? What did you do as a coach? Because that's such a different dynamic that nobody really has ever had to go through that I've talked to from a coaching perspective. To have that extra week when you think you're going into the final weekend, how did you approach that as a coach?
We tried to start out a little bit easy the first couple days. I mean, it's warm. The kids are ready to be out of school. They're ready to be out, you know, playing, having fun. And it was hard for the girls to come back and focus and work hard on the game. So with the first couple of practices, we kind of took it easy, and then we tried to, you know, regain our focus on what we wanted to accomplish.
If we talk about the loss, Coach, in the quarterfinals to Union, a game in which Union got out early, but at the same time, it was an opponent that you were familiar with. Did you like that matchup for this team in the quarterfinals?
I really did. Union has a good little pitcher, Rooks, and we kind of hadn't caught on to her yet. And I thought by the third game, I was expecting our hitters to do what they've done to most pitchers all year, and that's knock them out of the circle.
You had mentioned to me, Coach, that when it all came to a close, I mean, still this is one of the most successful seasons that Carbon High School has ever had in softball. I mean, a deep run, winning your first two state tournament games, and even picking up a win in the one-loss bracket. What'd you tell the girls when the season came to an end?
You know, I couldn't be happier. I mean, we basically, as a team, had two goals. Our first goal was to be region champion, and we were one run short of that goal. And then our second goal was to go deeper in the state tournament than we did last year. And we accomplished that goal. We went deeper than any Carbon team's ever gone. So I guess the bad thing about softball and a lot of sports is, you know, there's only a couple teams that end the season on the win. Everybody else ends their season with a loss.
Right. Right. As far as the overall performance in the state tournament, I asked you if you felt if the girls were playing their best baseball. Is the crowning moment of the season, Coach, that victory over North Stampede, is that the win that you'll probably remember most, or the moment that you'll remember most?
Yeah, that one was a lot of fun. That was that was one of the funnest games I've ever coached, because it was just back and forth all game long, and nobody knew who was going to come out on top.
Did the girls keep a pretty level head throughout that game as well, or was there a lot of emotions going back and forth, being that it is a state tournament game?
There's that, but they stayed focused. I mean, we talked before the game that, you know, both teams all season long had really hit the ball well. I mean, we had games where we had over 30 base hits, and North Stampede had really hit the ball well, so we really knew it was going to be a slugfest, and just to you know, not let our pitcher get down on herself or our defense get down on ourselves, but just keep bringing it up the plate. And we did that.
Again, we're being joined right now by Carbon softball manager Wade Williams. Coach, I want to talk about some of the individuals on this team. You guys have a pretty good senior class, to say the least, and we can talk about these girls front to back. I want to start by talking about Callie Fawcett, who really put together some remarkable games. When you take a look at the box scores, became one of the most feared hitters, I think, throughout the entire 3A classification, leads the team with 12 home runs. That's double the amount of next in line, which would be Pendergrass and Cripps, and they hit six, which is an impressive number. Cali found the rhythm throughout this year and was very effective for you guys.
Well, I think your stats are a little off. Cali did have a great year. She did hit 12 home runs. Two separate games, she hit three home runs in a game.
Wow.
And the impressive thing about Cali, most people don't know, is she started the season injured. She had just come off of shoulder surgery. So to do what she did, and she just got better as the season went on. So I couldn't be happier with the way Cali played and what she was able to accomplish. I think she also led the team with a 1.079 slugging percent, which is huge, which means she averaged, you know, a base every time she got up the bat.
Yeah. And I think she hit over 500 for the year, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I don't pay attention to their batting average. I'm all on base, and I think she was about a 650, 660 on base percent.
Well, let's talk about some of the other seniors on the team as well, Coach. Kelsey Sorensen, who has performed well over the course of multiple sports, a great kid all in all. I know that she recently signed to play some basketball now that her high school athletic career is done. But again, another solid senior for this team.
Yeah, Kelsey batted leadoff for us all year long, actually the last 2 years. I just figured her stats, her on-base percent ended up being 721. Which is just phenomenal. She led the team with 65 hits, and her work ethic, you know, we're really going to miss Kelsey.
If we go down the list of seniors, Coach, you also have Jordan West, who's a senior, I believe, right?
Yeah, Jordan was our 10th man. She did whatever we asked. She would play first base when Dakota Crashar would pitch. Dakota, you know, like I said, give us everything we asked. I was real happy with her. She ended up with almost a 500 on base percent in the 10th spot.
And then we also have Mackenda Pendergrass. I believe that was the fourth and final senior.
Yeah. And Mackenda has played shortstop for us for the last 3 years. Great ball player. Every once in a while, once or twice a game, she makes a play, and I just look over to my coaches and just think, man, you know, how did she do that? But McKenna also, you know, had a very high on-base percent. I think she ended up second or third on the team. She just somehow found a way to get on.
Coach, again, four seniors on this year's squad, so still relatively a young team. I know tremendously older than what you guys were last year, but when you look at the current state of your program moving forward, how happy are you with where this program is heading, even having to replace four pretty good seniors?
Yeah, you know, but I think that's the fun part about coaching is watching other kids when they get the chance, watching them step up and perform. You know, we had two great freshmen that played a lot of varsity ball for us this year. Brooke Mosman did most of our pitching. And Lindsay, so, you know, she ended up hitting in the number two spot. So I think the softball program is getting to be where the baseball program is at Carbon High, and that's basically that each year you just kind of reload.
Coach, this was also the first year for the softball program as far as the reclassification, the realignment that the Utah High School Activities Association brought upon us. And I thought all the way across the board in every sport, it's been good. And I, you know, when they first announced that there were going to be six classifications, I was iffy on it because you don't want to water anything down. But from a competitive standpoint, it just seemed like the 3A was extremely competitive across all sports, including softball.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously you have your better teams and the teams that are in the rebuilding phases. But that made for a lot of fun because, you know, each game to game, the strategy was, you know, a little bit different. And so it made for a great season. I mean, we set a lot of goals for the year as far as hits, and I think as a team we ended up the season with 421 hits. You know, that's pretty good. Almost 16 hits per game.
Yeah.
as a team, we hit 41 home runs. 10 different players hit a home run. So we did lots of good things. I'm really excited.
Coach, before I let you go, let's talk about the offseason. What does it hold for this team? Do you guys have anything planned at this point?
Well, in the summer, I encourage the girls to go play. I think it's a good time to play for different coaches, to go play as many games as they can. Obviously, with 20 girls, you know, I'd better see, you know, it's too many for to be on one team. But when school starts, probably September, we'll do what we did last year, and that's we'll start doing some open fields and open cages and start hitting and pitching and, you know, getting ready for next year.
Well, Coach, I appreciate you taking out the time to talk for a few minutes today. Congratulations on a tremendous 2018 season, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Okay, thanks, Jordan, and thanks for all you've done for us this year. And we'll talk to you later.
My pleasure, Coach. That's Coach Wade Williams of the Carbon Lady Dinos softball squad joining us here on Drive Time Sports. And, of course, you can listen to all the season recap interviews at CastleCountryRadio.com. Just click on the Drive Time Sports link, which is in the right-hand corner of the homepage, and you can listen to everything from the interviews to entire podcasts to local featured guest interviews. We have everything for you right there. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll come back. We're going to talk national sports. Countdown until June 9th. That's where we could have the 14th Triple Crown winner in the history of the Triple Crown. Man, we had one in 2015 with American Pharoah. Now Justify is looking to etch his spot in history. We're going to talk to Steve Bordstein about the odds of that, and did Justify use too much energy at the Preakness? That's coming up next when we return here on Drive Time Sports.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750 with Jordan Buscarini.
Yeah, running down a dream that never would come to me. Running down a dream.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM, and we are going to talk some horse racing as we are counting down the days until which, well, I guess Justify could become the second Triple Crown winner since American Pharoah in 2015. Stellar performance, I believe, over this past weekend, and of course we caught up with Steve Bordstein last week, a great friend of the show, great friend of mine, also the host of the Fast Track on Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico. Steve, great to get you back on. Thank you.
Appreciate the time very much.
Let's talk about Justify. I know every year for you, things pick up when we have a possible Triple Crown winner. I mean, in the Kentucky Derby, he looked fantastic. I mean, he won rolling away. This past weekend, I'll tell you why I was impressed with it. I don't know how much energy he had to spend and if it's possible for Justify to come back and win in a couple of weeks because he was injured, yet he still found a way to get a win, be it by a half a length, right? So, I mean, all in all, I want your assessment on what you saw from Justify.
Okay, well, let's start with the he was injured portion of that. I don't know how injured he really was. I don't know how injured he really is. You and I make the comparisons a lot to boxing. You cover boxing. When a boxer comes out of any kind of fight, a 12-round fight, something he's never done before, chances are he's not going to come out of it the next day looking the way he did the day before the fight. So he's going to be a little ouchy. I don't think it was significant. So I don't think the injury issue that a lot of armchair veterinarians, I'm always fascinated on Twitter the next day after the Belmont, how many people had veterinarians degrees because, oh my God, he can't walk and he's this and he's that. Like, I didn't realize there were that many people who just had veterinarians degrees who apparently have nothing better to do but sit in their basement and write posts on Twitter. But to the injury thing, I don't think he was ever that injured. I think whatever it was post-race ouchies, whatever you call it, post-race, you know, fatigue, whatever it was. But to your point, which is completely valid, Justify ran two races in the Preakness. The first race he ran was in trying to put away Good Magic, who dueled with him every step of the way for the first mile of the race. He finally puts away Good Magic midway, approaching the top of the stretch, finally puts him away, then has to hold off the late charge of the long shots Bravazo, who finishes second, and Tenfold, who finishes third. So it's an even more remarkable performance, considering, okay, let's go with the assumption he did have an ouchie after the Derby. He has to come back in 13 days to do what he did and then do it the way he does it, to me, is so impressive. And I know there's a lot of people who think he took a lot out of himself in this in the Preakness. Yes, that's called that's why the Triple Crown is a test of champions. That's why it is one of the hardest things to do in sports. It's not supposed to be easy. So what he did for me in the Preakness is 100 times better than what American Pharoah did when he won the Preakness by, 10 lengths or something,
right,
when he won the Preakness Stakes and was on his way to a Triple Crown. That effort on Saturday by Justify completely dwarfs that entire performance by American Pharoah 3 years earlier.
Okay, which is fair, because, again, I know you only like Triple Crown winners if they fit the pedigree, if they fit the namesake of a Triple Crown. You and I have had this conversation multiple times. You don't want a Triple Crown winner just to say we have a Triple Crown winner. And with your glowing review of what Justify was able to accomplish in the Preakness, I have to believe that you're willing to say, okay, if this horse wins the Belmont, boom, he deserves to be there.
And I think part of the reason we bought into the American Pharoah phase, the craze that was American Pharoah, because automatically there were comparisons. Oh, he's affirmed, he's secretariat, he's this, he's that. No, on the grand scheme of things, he's not even in the top five of all-time Triple Crown winners. You'd be out of your mind to put him in the same category as Affirmed or Secretariat or Citation or World Away. He's not even in their league. So, to me, we bought into the craze of American Pharoah because it hadn't been done in 37 years. We would have taken anybody, just so long as it was a Triple Crown winner. The fact that it was American Pharoah, we made him some sort of icon. We made him a hero. We made him a celebrity because it hadn't been done in so long. And in this day and age of social media and knee-jerk reactions on said social media, we made American Pharoah out to be this spectacular racehorse. I don't know if he's even, like I said, in the top five of Triple Crown winners or even among the top 10 of Triple Crown winners. I would be hard-pressed to say that he's in that category. However, Justify might just be. He might be. Remember the races between Affirmed and Ali Dar in 1978. Those were grueling, incredible throwdowns. Those were heavyweight championship fights. So I want my champion to be able to overcome those things. I want my champion, Justify, to be able to overcome the Apollo curse of 1886. I want my Triple Crown champion to withstand the rigors of running two races at one time. I want my Triple Crown champion to be able to overcome what will likely be a bunch of new shooters who skipped out of the Preakness and are going to come back to them in the Belmont. That's what the test of a champion is. And if he pulls this off on June 9, you can justifiably, no pun intended, put him in that category of Affirmed. You can put him in that category of Seattle Slough. You can put him in that category of Secretariat, and I'd have no argument there whatsoever.
Again, we're being joined right now with Steve Bordstein of Fox Sports in Farmington, New Mexico. Again, you can listen to Steve on First Sports and also the Fast Track, 1340 AM. Steve, we'll talk more about your show in just a moment, but a question I got to ask you when it comes to Justify, and you look back at what he's gone through over the past, I don't know, 4 weeks, how much will the extra week off going into the Belmont actually help him?
It will, because of the distance of the race. I mean, it was a war, so the mile and 3/16 distance, I mean, again, he had to run two races in one, so the extra time off isn't going to hurt him. It certainly, I mean, he's going to need the extra couple of days, just again, it's the post-race ouchies. It's the post-race, you know, stuff, the fatigue factor. He's already back at Churchill Downs. He returned to his base at Churchill Downs the day after the Preakness was over. He'll probably take a couple of days off. He'll probably come back for a workout, I would say Saturday or Sunday. We'll get him one more workout afterwards, and then they'll ship him off to Belmont Park, where he's going to have to deal with 9,000 things, including a fervent fan base that's going to greet him, a fervent press corps that's going to glom all over him as trying to be the 13th Triple Crown winner of all time. There's a million different things that are going to happen the week he arrives at Belmont Park, in addition to the fact that now he goes to Todd Fletcher's backyard, where Todd Fletcher Hunter, who's going to start probably at least two horses. Audible, I would imagine. You know, Rosso's going to run. You're going to see probably a number of horses that didn't bother to run in the Preakness Stakes. You'll probably see the likes of Hofburg. Now remember, they'll have all had now 5 weeks. They'll have all had that time between the Derby and the Belmont to rest and recover and recuperate and throw their best shot at Justify. Again, new racetrack. And what, you know what would be so ironic about all of this is there seems to be this gray rain cloud that follows Justify around. How amazing would it be if it rained on Belmont Day? And he would get detractors. There would be detractors who would say, well, he only won it on a sloppy racetrack. Well, they all have to run over the same sloppy racetrack. But even more so, what if it turns out to be a perfectly sunny day in Midtown, New York on Belmont Day, and he wins that? Because then he'll have won the Triple Crown over the sloppy, sort of more blacktop-like conditions of Churchill Downs, the sloppy, sort of soupy conditions at Pimlico, and then a fast, dry track at Belmont Park in front of 100,000 people. There are so many great stories to this, and all I hear from people is, oh, he can't do this, he can't do that. All he's done is win, and he's done this overcoming some amazing obstacles, having not raced it too, having all these races thrown into this short amount of time, even the races he ran before the Triple Crown. There's so many elements to the story that are fascinating to me.
Well, let's go back to 2004, because Smarty Jones was in a similar situation as Justify, right? I mean, he was undefeated at the time, goes into the Belmont Stakes. It was one of the most thrilling finishes that we have had in quite some time. I mean, you go back and you watch that race. I watched it again just for good measure this morning, and really what Birdstone was able to do late, coming down the final stretch. I believe Smarty was a furlong away from winning the Triple Crown. Who's Birdstone this year to justify being Smarty Jones? Who's the guy that you throw in, the horse that you throw in of being this year's Birdstone?
There's two. There's the horse that ran third in the Derby, and that's Audible. Audible, in my mind, ran a better race than Good Magic did when he was second in the Derby behind Justify. Audible ran a very difficult race because he had never run over a sloppy track before, and he got caught up in like the second flight of horses. He was probably too far back to make a significant rally, but his move that he makes, go back and watch the Derby, watch the move that Audible makes to go from about 4 or 5 wide. He drops over to the rail and he makes this nice bid and just misses second to Good Magic. I think the fact that, Audible's a Belmont kind of horse, he'll have that late kick going. I think he's one to watch. And there was a horse that ran a sneaky good race in the Derby called Hofburg. Hofburg ended up, I believe, finishing ninth in the Derby. And his race is sneaky good because he runs like in two different spots. There was a mid-race move that he made, and then there was a move he made to just, kind of finish up the track a little bit. But he didn't lose a lot of ground. That was the thing I was impressed about, is I think his pedigree also definitely suggests that he'll definitely go on. I think those are the two horses that I would fear the most of the so-called new shooters, the ones who ran in the Derby but didn't run in the Preakness Stakes. I don't imagine Good Magic will be a factor. I just don't see it. If he even decides to go in that spot. There's also an interesting player. We haven't heard that he won't go. We're kind of hearing that he might go at another race. But the horse that won the race just prior to the Preakness was a stakes race at a mile at Belmont Park. A horse by the name of Axeman, who ironically enough, trained by Bob Baffert, ridden by Mike Smith. So I don't know what Mike Smith's going to do in that situation, but that could be another one. So there's a couple of horses that are really intriguing to me. But to that end, other than that, I don't think there's anyone in his ballpark. I think Justify is so much better than these other horses. Now, if he loses the Belmont, does that make Justify a bad horse? Absolutely not. It just means, to your point about Smarty Jones, which is an excellent comparison, Smarty Jones, was a decent racehorse afterwards, but I think Justify is better than Smarty Jones was. I think Justify is better than Spectacular Bid was before he lost in the Belmont Stakes to Coastal in 1979. I think Justify is better than both of those horses.
You didn't mention Blended Citizen, who actually picked up the Peter Pan Stakes back on May 12th. Is he at all a factor in your mind?
To me, no, because I think his style is so one-paced, and I don't like the pedigree necessarily on him. He's a factor. I mean, he'll be a factor if he decides, to challenge maybe on the front end, if they decide to go up to the lead with him early, but I don't look at him as a major contender, no.
Okay, I think that when you look back in any sport, history can somewhat do the math for us. And you did mention Audible, and the fact is Todd Pletcher has found success in bringing in horses who are well-rested into the finale of the Triple Crown Series, okay? He's also won the Belmont three times. I mean, that's a logical reason to look at Audible in this sense.
One of my favorite racehorses of all time, and it's weird, and I want to get to this in a second here. One of my favorite racehorses of all time is Rags to Riches. Rags to Riches was a filly who won the Kentucky Oaks the day before the Kentucky Derby. They could have done anything with her at that point. They could have put her in the Acorn Stakes at Belmont Park. Instead, Todd Pletcher does the unthinkable, and he enters Rags to Riches in the Belmont Stakes against Curlin. Curlin had won the Preakness, and Curlin was remarkable. Curlin was going to wind up being one of the top racehorses of that entire decade. So he enters the filly, and everyone's looking at Todd Pletcher like he's insane. I was already in love with Rags to Riches. I bet on Rags to Riches that day, had my hand over my eyes watching as Rags to Riches did something that had never been done in a century, and that was become the first filly to win the Belmont Stakes. So Todd Pletcher knows what Bob Baffert's going through right now. He understands that. And to your point about you know, being a trainer for that situation, Todd Pletcher is that guy. That's why I fear him and his horse Audible more than anybody, because Todd Pletcher knows what that's like to get a horse ready for the Belmont coming off a big win, maybe not necessarily in the Derby, but you know, the Rags to Riches winning the Kentucky Oaks is as dramatic a win for a filly as winning the Derby is for a colt or a gelding.
Steve Bordstein, go ahead and let the listeners know where they can find more of your work, Steve, including the Fast Track and of course First Sports.
Weekday mornings, I do a regular national sports show called First Sports. We cover everything under the sun. Weekday mornings, 7 to 10 a.m. Mountain Time, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern. You can catch it on the iHeartRadio app, which is available through your smartphone or wireless device. Download the iHeartRadio app today. You can listen to the show online through our website at foxsports1340.com. And then on weekends, you mentioned the Fast Track. I host that show, nationally syndicated. We talk every track around the country, big races, best bets from coast to coast. That is available also online through the iHeartRadio app and on our website. You can catch that weekend mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. local time. And, of course, you can also follow me on Twitter at Fox1340 a.m.
Steve, it's always so much fun to get you on and talk some horse racing or baseball or whatever it is we talk. I appreciate the time again today. Thank you.
Anytime, my friend. Have a great day.
Again, that's Steve Bordstein of Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico taking out the time to join us. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Yeah, what's up? This is Middle World Peace, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini. Yeah.
Back to put the final touches on this edition of the show. Led by talking some NBA basketball. A couple of quick storylines to point out. First off, the all-defensive first and second teams have been announced. And to no surprise, Rudy Gobert, his first team, was not unanimous, although he did pick up the most first-place votes. He gets 94 out of a possible 100. He also had four second-team votes as well. Anthony Davis is on the first team, as is Victor Oladipo, Drew Holiday, and Robert Covington. You see a problem with that? Draymond Green's not NBA all-first defensive team? What the hell's going on here? Second team, Joel Embiid, Draymond Green, Al Horford, DeJounte Murray, and Jimmy Butler. Give me Draymond over Robert Covington. I don't agree with that. Draymond got 26 first-team votes. Covington got 27. Draymond got 34 second-team votes. Covington got 36. So he edges out Draymond. Not that it really matters, but Draymond, he's got to be first-team. Come on. Next to Rudy Gobert, give me Draymond as far as defenders in this league. Let's take a look at some of the other storylines in the NBA. Doc Rivers, surprisingly, gets a contract extension to remain with the Los Angeles Clippers. Now, the terms were not announced today, but he was entering the final year of his contract. I really thought with Jerry West coming in and some of the moves that the Clippers had made, you know, moving on from Chris Paul and moving on from Blake Griffin, I thought that there was a good chance that Doc Rivers would be on his way out. It would kind of be like a rebirth of the Clippers, but they're going to keep Doc Rivers around for a little longer. And here's a no-brainer report. Adrian Wojnarowski, you know, we always wait for the Woj bombs, right? because as far as inside scoops in the NBA go, there's nobody better than Adrian Wojnarowski. Says the T-Wolves would keep Karl Anthony Towns over management, including Tom Thibodeau. Yeah, I think so. I don't think we need an inside scoop on that. Minnesota Timberwolves owner Glenn Taylor would change the front office and the coaching staff, which is led by Scott Layden, familiar name, and of course Tom Thibodeau, before allowing this organization to trade Karl Anthony Towns. Probably the right idea. In this day and age, players win, coaches lose. That's the way it works. Karl Anthony Towns is going nowhere. That's a once-in-a-generational type talent. You're not getting rid of that guy. You may get rid of Andrew Wiggins. You're not getting rid of Karl Anthony Towns. No possible way. Out of time on this edition of the show. I want to thank Steve Bortstein, and of course, we got to thank Coach Wade Williams as we continue to wrap up the 2018 high school sports season, 2017-2018 high school sports season. Do not forget, you can listen to all those interviews by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. Just click on the Drive Time Sports link. For Travis Anderson, who was out today, I'm Jordan Buscarini. We'll catch you tomorrow. Be safe. We are out.